From the nation's capital, this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. At our microphones today is Secretary Michael Brown. Secretary Brown has been there in the state of Kentucky with the Justice and Public Safety Cabinet for the last 4 years. He has a long history of public service as a judge, as a prosecutor, as a law director for the city of Louisville, U.S. Army as a captain. He's a gentleman that's been around for quite some time. And one of the reasons why we asked Secretary Brown to be on our microphones or be by our microphones today is that he's gotten a lot of news. We have a lot of, we have a couple new services that come into us here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And the first one that caught my eye was from the dailynews.com. And it said state's 2-year recidivism rate hits a 10-year low. And all of us within the criminal justice system, we're struggling to do just that. We're struggling to bring down our recidivism rates. That's enough to make it interesting, but it goes on to the Courier Journal in terms of Governor Beshear signing a new act in terms of rearranging the way that Kentucky does business, and it goes all the way to the Wall Street Journal, where a recent article says that states rethink drug laws. So the state of Kentucky has gotten an awful lot of publicity lately, national publicity. A lot of people are looking at the state of Kentucky in terms of what it is that they've done. But again, for me, the most intriguing part of this is the headline, state's 2-year recidivism rate hits a 10-year low. And with that introduction, it is Secretary Michael Brown, a secretary for the last 4 years. Mr. Secretary, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
I'm glad to be with you, Leonard.
Okay. Now, the what we have with the Justice and Public Safety Cabinet, you have an operation much like mine in the 14 years when I was with the Maryland Department of Public Safety, where we had state police, we had corrections, we had a lot of agencies. You have the same thing there for the state of Kentucky, correct?
That is correct. It is the largest cabinet in state government. We have right around 8,000 employees in the cabinet, and my major units include the Department of Corrections, the Kentucky State Police, our juvenile justice, and then we have medical examiners and criminal justice training and drug control policy, and just a number of other agencies that are attached, including our public defenders.
One of the things that you mentioned in terms of the pre-interview is that one time Kentucky had the fastest growing prison population in the country, correct?
Well, that is correct. Actually, Governor Beshear took office in December of 2007, and shortly after his first address to the General Assembly in January of 2008, the Pew Center on the States came out with a report that listed Kentucky as having the fastest growing prison population by percentage in the country. And that was something that took a number of us by surprise. We knew that corrections had been an escalating budget item. We didn't know that we had crossed the finish line first in that particular situation.
Now, one of the things that Kentucky, as well as virtually every state in the United States, is struggling with is this concept of a corrections budget that a lot of people in a lot of state houses throughout the country, they're coming to the conclusion that the corrections budget is growing out of control, that it's taking up too much of the budget, that there's no way that you can sustain that level of increase in the prison population. It's taking away from funding for college. It's taking away for funding for seniors. It's taking away funding for schools. It has a tremendous impact on not just criminal justice, but it has a tremendous impact in terms of the overall budget. And what a lot of states are trying to do, what they're trying to wrestle with, is this whole concept of how do we rein in the corrections budget without having an adverse impact on public safety. And that's why I keep coming back to the same issue, recidivism. You hit a 10-year low. How did you do that?
Well, that was a target that, frankly, we just decided we had to aim at. When we were looking at our population, and clearly the only way to reduce your, or the main way to reduce your prison budgets, your correctional budget, is by means of population. And when we look at our population, we know it's made up of basically two segments. We have people who have recently committed a felony that they're going to be sent to our facilities for, but we also found that a fair percentage of all the people who come through the doors each year are coming back. They're returnees. They're return customers. And that's the recidivism rate, those who are coming back after a 2 or 3 year period of being released. And we, when we looked at those recidivists, we recognized that a fair amount of them are what I would call reentry failures. They're ones who have gotten out, they've gone back out in the community. Within, as everyone in this business knows, the likelihood of failure is highest in that, in those first few months to a year. And those individuals then come back. When they do come back, they come back and stay generally for a longer period of time than they were in for the first period. So that becomes a, and I'll give you an example. In Kentucky, if you have you committed a crime and you're eligible for parole after serving 20% of your sentence, and then you go out and you violate that parole and in return, it's likely that you're going to be in for a period of time longer than that initial 20%.
Understood.
So we, in my cabinet, I cannot control what the courts are doing. We cannot completely control what the legislature is going to do vis-a-vis what becomes a crime. So our target had to be, by just the natural process, how can we improve our reentry efforts? How can we cut that recidivism rate? And a cut of 1,000 prisoners at $21,000 or so dollars a year starts to add up to real money if you can succeed at this.
Now, you said that you went to the Pew Center for the States and they provided some technical assistance.
Well, that was well down the road. What had happened was we had taken a number of different approaches to try to address this issue. The governor in January of 2008 had asked me to convene what's called our Criminal Justice Council. It's a large body involving all the stakeholders in the criminal justice system to make recommendations on the penal code and the drug laws. And we came up with reports, but were unsuccessful to a large extent in getting many things passed through the legislature. Then the legislature itself came up with a joint resolution creating another committee to look at these issues. And then finally, this most recently concluded legislature had come up with a task force on penal code and substance abuse, which was a very small group, only seven people. And historically, those seven, it was bipartisan, a Republican chair of the Senate Judiciary, a Democratic chair of the House Judiciary Committee. The Chief Justice of our Supreme Court sat himself. I represented the executive branch. We had a retired Commonwealth attorney, a former public advocate, and a county judge executive. We started work on reviewing, particularly targeting what we were going to do with probation, parole, and reentry, and also our drug laws. Then, in the middle of that process, somewhat in the middle of it, the Pew Public Safety Performance Project partnered with us. Our legislature put up some seed money of $200,000. Last August, in August of 2010, we announced a collaborative effort where Pew would give us technical assistance, primarily working with the committee I described, to come up with a legislative package, which was, in fact, introduced in the session which most recently concluded.
Now, what do you, the group of the small group of individuals, basically, did you feel comfortable with a game plan coming out of that? And then Pew was just a technical assistance beyond that? Do you think, do I have that correct?
Well, what happened was the task force had started its work, and we had narrowed the focus of this particular task force to, primarily to looking at our drug laws.
Right.
Recognizing that that was the largest driver of our, certainly our revolving criminal population. It's always going to be a place for those incorrigibles and those offenders, of the violent ones. But as I looked at Kentucky's population of 20-odd thousand, clearly, if you took away those who were in as persistent felony offenders and the most violent offenders, that still left about 15,000 individuals that were in. And the bulk, I'm talking about the very large bulk of those 15,000, were in because of something to do with drugs.
Okay.
Now, so but what the Pew folks brought to us was the ability to bring evidence-based basically studies and attempts from all over the country of how to deal with some of these issues and boil them down in a manner that we could literally take the best practices from all over the country, and then if they had the recipe, we had the seasoning to make it come out to a Kentucky burgoo, so to speak.
Well, that's a beautiful description. I love that. What do you think was the most important, or give me a couple of the most important policies that came out of all of this? Different people have been caught up in crime and drugs for decades. It's not easy to get them out of that cycle. It's not easy to break the cycle. What were the principal ingredients in terms of how you proceeded to cut that recidivism rate?
Well, the first thing is you have to recognize that the cycle needs to be broken, and that it's not simply, it's not just a matter of just say no. We have, for example, some very successful drug courts here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, but the requirements for those coming into the drug court system, which is somewhat of a diversionary process, were pretty strict.
Mm-hmm.
And that really didn't do much for those who had already offended and managed to find a way in the facilities to stop mm-hmm. them from coming back. We have to recognize that breaking that cycle of a true abuser is going to take long-term treatment, anywhere from 6 to 9 months. It's not just simply going to be, tell them to stop taking it.
Right.
And it also involves a situation where our probation and parole practices have to be aimed at reinforcing those principles once an individual is either on probation or parole, because there are relapses.
Right.
Now, recognizing that, we don't want the relapse to take someone all the way back, behind the fence, as we like to say.
Right. So, in essence, what you have is a prison population, they're eventually released, they come out onto the street, and a lot of them, and for a lot of states throughout the country, when I was with the Maryland, at times it approached 70% of the people coming into the prison systems were already on parole and probation. I've seen figures ranging anywhere from 50% to 70% of the prison intake are those people already on parole and probation. So that revolving door, that sense of life or prison or the criminal justice system on the installment plan, seems to be alive and well in most states. So in essence, what I'm hearing is that what you all decided to do was to stop that cycle, to break that cycle. And it sounds like you're focusing on specifically, is it nonviolent or violent offenders? But your principal goal is to get them involved in long-term drug treatment.
Well, the first thing we wanted to recognize, what were the biggest drivers? And the biggest driver in the population was drugs.
Right.
That entailed us making adjustments to our drug laws, which hadn't been made in many, many years, and to include provisions in those which were going to drive these individuals. Well, first, it was going to drive those who were the users. We definitely wanted to separate the traffickers, those who are truly involved in the criminal enterprise,
mm-hmm.
the profiteers, and separate them from what you might call the peddlers or just the abusers.
Right.
And we know that that's how it breaks down.
Okay.
We also needed in Kentucky, because of our, and I don't want to call it unique, but it definitely is different from, say, some of the other states we looked at. We have a diverse sort of drug problem. Parts of our states, our drug problem is driven almost entirely by the abuse of prescription drugs.
Ah, that is
pills,
different.
Pills that generally come in from other states.
Right.
Florida in particular, if you don't mind me taking a shot at a governor, I won't name right now, but we have a large influx of prescription drugs that come in from other states, and they are having a devastating effect on one part of our state. Other parts of our state, we see some of the more traditional things that involve meth, cocaine, or heroin to a certain extent. And then, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Kentucky was the second largest eradicator of marijuana, which is probably our largest crop. of any other state in the country.
Okay.
So our drug laws had to be tailored to address this, you know, multifaceted issue. But going for a moment, just to go back to what you were saying about the returnee situation, I had it said, and I was actually called cavalier for saying this, even though it's true, if my population today is right around 20,500, if they live long enough, all but about 105 of those individuals are going to get out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And are going to come back into communities. And that is a perception that the public doesn't have. The public perceives that individuals commit a crime, they get caught, they get prosecuted, and then they go away forever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't go away forever. And what we have to do is do something about those 95 to 99% that are coming back into that community.
Mm-hmm.
You break that cycle, that's where you make your real gains in public safety. You make your real economic gains, because if you can turn a large segment of those folks back into, you know, productive citizens, as opposed to where we supply all their needs. My medical budget is around $60 million just for our felony population.
Yeah, and people have no idea how difficult it is to run a huge prison system and how expensive it is to run a huge prison system. I just get the sense that people have no clue, but they're finding out because of all of the controversy as to all the money going into correction systems, and people are saying, gee, wouldn't this be better spent in terms of other programs? But again, I reemphasize, it's just not a matter of dollars here. It's just not a matter of reducing the correctional dollars. You've been able to cut the rate of recidivism back into the state of Kentucky for a 10-year low. And so you're doing it and protecting public safety at the same time.
Well, that's the ultimate goal. That's the win-win. You know, obviously, public safety is our primary concern.
Right.
But clearly, when you recognize that by breaking these cycles and by decreasing that recidivism rate, the benefit there is, in fact, public safety.
And
individual doesn't go out and commit that crime. He's not a bane on society anymore.
Right, and they're huge savings in terms of crime, in terms of the tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars to track him down, to convict him, to put him back into the prison system. I mean, this is an ungodly expensive proposition, and what you're doing is not just saving money, but there are fewer crimes being committed.
That's the goal, and we are in a situation on we had, you know, as you know, the states, and our state certainly, we have to operate under a balanced budget, so we can't spend more than we have.
We're more than halfway through the program, ladies and gentlemen. I want to reintroduce Secretary Michael Brown, the Secretary of the Justice and Public Safety Cabinet for the state of Kentucky. The website, www.justice.ky.gov, www.justice.ky.gov. I'll be giving out that website at the end of the program. Okay, Mr. Secretary, we've set up everything, I think. I mean, in terms of the 10-year low on recidivism, we've set up the fact that you're trying to break the cycle, that you're looking not at traffickers, but you're looking specifically at the users, that you have a prescription drug problem and a marijuana problem there in the state of Kentucky. It sounds like you have across-the-board cooperation on the part of both sides of the political spectrum, the Republicans and the Democrats coming together and agreeing to this overall philosophy. So that part of it I've got correct, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And the recent bill that passed, which is House Bill 463, which Pew assisted us on and that task force worked on, it passed our Senate, which is a Republican-controlled Senate, unanimously, went back to the House for concurrence and passed 96-1. That's an overwhelming approval for the work of the task force and recognition of the issues we have to deal with. Now,
there's
they should only be so cooperative on the other issues in the state, but at least on this one, we had virtual unanimity.
There's an organization now called Right on Crime, which is key Republicans at the national level who are coming together to endorse this concept. And a lot of individuals have said to themselves, okay, well, this is no longer a Democratic issue. It's no longer a Republican issue. It's now a bipartisan issue. They want the criminal justice system. They want we within the criminal justice system to be more effective and prove that effectiveness. And this is why I'm beating this point to death. You know, there are a lot of states who are doing this, and they're starting to do it, and they're examining it, and they're putting money into programs in the prison system, and they're putting money into the programs at the parole and probation level. But they haven't yet produced data that shows that, you know, there's a reduction in recidivism. And to the average person listening to this program, recidivism, again, are people coming back into the criminal justice system because they either committed new crimes or technical violations. But as our people like to point out, as a person doesn't show up for supervision, that's a technical violation. So the term technical violation becomes minimized in the minds of some because it sounds trite, but if you don't show up for supervision or if you're ordered to go in the drug treatment and you don't go or you don't cooperate, those are technical violations as well. So some of this is a matter of taking greater risks with the individual that you have under supervision, that you don't automatically send them back to prison. You try to stabilize him through programs in the community, and you understand that relapse and problems come with the supervision process, and just because you have two or three, you don't automatically send a person back to prison. Do I have that correct?
That is correct. In fact, some of the things that we had done in a budget bill and that which have been also codified in our new piece of legislation is to give our parole and probation officers some additional tools to work with, including for the first time here in Kentucky, some intermediate sanctions.
Okay.
Where rather than in a prior world, an individual would violate a condition of parole or probation. They would be a warrant issued. They'd be arrested. They'd go to jail. They'd sit in jail awaiting a process involving going before an administrative law judge. The administrative law judge, if they found probable cause, would then send the case to the parole board. Most of that time, that individual continue to sit in jail, mm-hmm. awaiting the outcome of it, and then if the parole board revoked, they go back to prison. We found that a better way to approach some of those individuals, obviously this doesn't work for everybody, but mm-hmm. is to make use of intermediate sanctions, and they can be a ramped up scale of sanctions, everything from we're going to put you on an electronic GPS monitoring device to be sure you don't go where we told you not to go.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe have that thing vibrate on your ankle as you approach someplace where we know you're likely to get back into trouble.
Right.
Or we can put you back in jail, but for limited periods of time without having to go through that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't cut off whatever positive ties someone has created, either with a job or family connections, when they have been outside of the institution. Because, as I've said, once they come back on that violation, statistics show us that they're going to serve a longer period of time having violated than they served initially.
Mm-hmm. And the whole idea, I'm assuming that, again, it's one of the universal issues that states are struggling with, is that the question becomes, who do you want to be in, who do you want to occupy that prison bed? Do you want a nonviolent offender who's tied into drugs to occupy that prison bed, that very, very, very expensive prison bed, or do you want the violent offender, somebody who is posing a clear and present risk to public safety? I mean, that dichotomy, I would imagine, exists in Kentucky as well, and I would imagine that was part of your discussions.
As was said many, many times during our hearings and as we visited all the stakeholders, we've got to differentiate between the people that we're scared of and the people that we're just mad at.
Right.
And you know, once you get past being mad at these individuals, the key is what do we do in many situations to stop them from returning? Now, Kentucky had been very fortunate. A few years back, we got one of the grants from the Second Chance Act. We had started our reentry program. We had started working with a new risk assessment tool. And in fact, that use of the risk assessment tool has been so successful that it's built into the new legislation with the aim that we're going to get that LSI used from day one that someone comes in the system. So judges will eventually be looking at some of these factors when they're making bail decisions, so that our pre-sentence officers are making use of that assessment as they give judges recommendations for sentencing, so that when an individual is processed into the institution, we have a lot of data available into what, if any, programs are going to work for a particular individual. And that's far different from a shotgun effect that we used to take. You know, our approach before, and I don't blame anybody for this, this is not throwing a rock at the system, but it's how you view your job. And our job before was to simply keep these people away from the public, count them, and make sure you have the same number you started out at in the morning when they go to bed at night, then do it again. Now some of our focus, both institutionally and certainly in parole and probation, is to how can we prevent this particular individual from coming back to see us again?
Well, you know, going towards the larger scale, because it's just not the state of Kentucky. Again, this is something that every state in the United States is wrestling with. The Attorney General Eric Holder, the Assistant Attorney General Laurie Robinson, the folks at the U.S. Department of Justice, the people who are trying to develop this whole sense of justice reinvestment, which is essentially if you save money in terms of people coming back into prisons, the states would put more of that money. So if you save the state of any state $50 million and the fact that you didn't send that many people back, a certain amount of that $50 billion would go back into programs and go back into efforts to keep people from coming back into the system. So this is a larger, this is just not a conversation for the state of Kentucky. This is a conversation that's happening in virtually every state house in the country. And again, not to beat a dead horse, but you're the one who's proven that you can reduce recidivism. Other states have reduced recidivism, but you hit a 10-year low. That's what intrigued me, and that's why one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you.
Well, and again, a lot of it is, you know, I hate to be use the cliche, you know, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. But if you go around and you really get a focused effort in, these are very smart, dedicated professionals. And it's simply a matter of saying, here's what our goal is, this is what our mission is going to be in this situation. And believe me, most of our probation and parole officers, they don't want to just be in the arrest business. They don't want to be. They would rather have people succeed.
Sure.
Because when they do these home visits and when they do these assessments, they run up against everyone else who's touched by these individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much, much better that these individuals succeed than fail on the outside.
I'll give you one example in the state of Maryland where we had a person come out of the prison system. His wife let him come back home. He was getting along well with the wife, getting along well with the kids. He was working, and he was making his restitution, and he was going to substance abuse therapy. He was doing everything that you want him to do, and yet he celebrated by getting high. He celebrated his successes by getting high. And there's a certain point where the fourth, fifth, sixth positive drug test, I mean, you have to sit down with him and say to him, look, you're about to blow the whole thing. We're about to send you back to prison. There's a certain point we have no choice. You know, when you have a couple more, and then finally we were able to intervene, and he finally stopped celebrating his successes by getting high. But if that person had committed a crime while that happened, you know, the newspaper would have come to us and said, you knew he was doing drugs. Why didn't you put him back in prison? That's a big dilemma for people at the state level. That's a big dilemma for us all within the criminal justice system, because we are taking somewhat increased risks with the people that we have under supervision.
Well, and that's where, you know, as I said, the beauty of this law, it's building in. And one of the things I do want to touch on is the reinvestment aspect. But it's building in a way to make these risk assessments. Nothing is going to be 100% perfect. But the key is, rather than, sometimes our intuition is just flat wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We think that, oh, that looks like a great program. Why? Well, it will work for me. Well, maybe your criminogenic factors are not the same as the people you're actually dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So while it might work for you, we've proven that it doesn't work for this population that we have been locking up. So let's use what works for them. One of the things that 463, this bill did, it codified a way to return some of the money that's saved back into the reentry systems and into our local jails and counties. Kentucky also has a fairly unique, when I say fairly unique, it's just us in Louisiana, where one-third of my felon population resides in our county jails.
Uh-huh.
So if we don't find a way to enhance the programs and what's going on in those county jails, we also miss an opportunity to cut this recidivism rate and also thereby, you know, not take the fullest advantage of our public safety dollars. So 25% of the projected savings from one of our efforts, and please remind me, please ask me about the mandatory supervision provision in this bill, which I think is the key.
Well, go ahead and say that, but we only have about 30 seconds left, so we have to wrap up soon.
Well, in wrapping up then, I'd say one of the key parts of the bill is we recognize that the early part of failure happens in those first 6 to 9 months. So we're going to put in a program where the last 6 months of an individual sentence are now under mandatory supervision with probation and parole.
There you go.
We're very excited about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Secretary Michael Brown, who has refocused an entire criminal justice system focusing on high-risk offenders, being sure that they're incarcerated, and taking some chances and actually getting some great results in terms of a 10-year low in his recidivism rate for everybody else. He's saved the state and the different people down there. The governor and the collective wisdom has saved the state in the process, literally millions of dollars. So Secretary Michael Brown, we congratulate you on these successes. Again, if you want to take a look at the website for the state of Kentucky, it's www.justice.ky.gov, www.justice.ky.gov. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. I want everybody to have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.